Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Welcome to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I'm your host, Cale Clark. So glad that you're with me. Well, this is a brand new mini-series that we're starting called Bonding with James. You get the pun. I'm a big James Bond fan, but I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about a real life character, James, the so-called brother of the Lord. We've been talking about him a little bit with respect to Easter because he's one of the people that was convinced to become a believer in Jesus because of the resurrection. He changed his mind. He was a skeptic, and then he became a believer. Then he became the Bishop of Jerusalem. And then he became a martyr. So we're going to talk about him. And he really came to the fore of people's imaginations way back in 2002 because the ossuary or the bone box of James got into the news and actually was displayed at the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto. Now, in terms of Jewish burial practices of the time, and I've gone to Israel, I've dived into many first century tombs and looked at what was found there in my archaeological explorations and adventures that I've done throughout my grad studies. But in the first century, it was very, very common for Jews to, after death, a body would be placed into a tomb. And then a year after the death, the bones would be collected. Obviously, the flesh is decayed at that point. And then secondary burial would take place. The bones would be collected, put into a box, which is known as an ossuary or a bone box, and then that would return to a family tomb. And it was very common to have multiple family members buried in the same tomb. You might remember a scene in the Gospels where Jesus asks a man to follow him, and he says, "First, let me go and bury my father." And Jesus says, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." Now that seems very insensitive of Jesus, but what's going on here is that the man's father has already died. He's not saying, don't go be with your dad as he's passing away, getting ready for eternity. No, he's already been dead. And what's going on there is secondary burial is about to happen. They're going to collect the bones, put them in this ossuary, and then the final resting place will be his. So Jesus is saying, okay, that may not be the most important thing at this time. And so this first century ossuary or bone box had an inscription on it. It was discovered, and the inscription said, "Yaakov bar Yosef Akui de Yeshua," and that's translated into English as "James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus." You might remember all the media attention that was paid to this. If it is, in fact, the genuine article, if it is, in fact, the bone box, the ossuary of the James mentioned in the New Testament. You might be wondering which James. There's a lot of different James. We'll get into that too. I get a lot of questions about this from time to time. We'll straighten it out for you. But if this is the so-called brother of the Lord Jesus, and by the way, don't worry. This does not mean he's another son of Mary. Mary only has one child, Jesus. And she was ever virgin. This may be this ossuary in its inscription from the first century may be the first written evidence, the first known written reference to Jesus that exists. It's incredible. So the Discovery Channel, along with the Biblical Archaeology Society, announced jointly that this ossuary was discovered in October of 2002. The Israel Antiquities Authority, and that's the body that is responsible for all archaeological finds of note in the Holy Land, they were very doubtful from the beginning that this was, in fact, real. The man who owned the ossuary, Oded Golan, was actually taken to court. He was accused of forging the inscription referencing James and Jesus on the box. But a big court case ensued, and 12,000 pages of court documents were put together at the end of the day. Over 138 witnesses were called. And on March the 14th, 2012, an Israeli judge by the name of Aaron Farkash of the Jerusalem District Court decided that Oded Golan, who owned the bone box, was cleared of any charges of forgery. And there are still people to this day who express doubt about whether or not it's authentic, but a lot of experts say that it is. And I personally think that it probably is. And I've seen it. And when it was on display in Toronto, the city in which I live, I went to see it at the Royal Ontario Museum, and biblical scholars and archaeologists from all over the world poured into the city to see this first century artifact. And we'll talk a little bit more about the James ossuary later on in this series, but I want to talk about who James himself was, first of all. First of all, I want to deal with this whole question of what does it mean to say that James is the brother of the Lord? And we're going to get into who these other James are in just a bit. But again, this does not mean that he is another son of Mary. And you might know that there's about four views overall about who these quote-unquote brothers and sisters of Jesus are that are mentioned in the New Testament. One thing you should know as a Catholic, if you're listening to this as a Catholic, that there is nothing in the New Testament that says that Mary had other children. What people believe on this is based on their church tradition. There's a book that was written several years ago by a number of biblical scholars. It was called Mary in the New Testament. There's a companion book, Peter in the New Testament, and basically it consisted of scholars from various traditions, Catholic, various Protestant traditions, Eastern Orthodox perhaps, and they all looked at the biblical texts with respect to Mary, and they all agreed that when it comes to the question of Mary being ever virgin, the idea that she had other children other than Jesus, that does not say that in the New Testament. And again, this is people reading their church tradition into the evidence to some extent, but it does not say clearly that Mary had other children. So just so you know, just so you know. And obviously in the Catholic Church, we hold that she did not. But here are the views. So the secular view, the view of most non-Christians or people who read the New Testament might be aware of what it says about the family of Jesus. They think that these other brothers and sisters of the Lord are in fact full brothers, full sisters, other children of Mary and Joseph. So some biblical texts that you might know of. One of them is Matthew chapter 13, verses 54 to 56. When Jesus went into his hometown of Nazareth, he's teaching there. People in the congregation were amazed at his wisdom. They say, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Jude? And are not all his sisters with us? That's Matthew 13, 54 to 56. And we see something similar in the Gospel of Mark. In Mark chapter 6, verse 3, it says, James and Joseph, and Joseph is kind of a variant of Joseph, and Judas and Simon. It talks about these so-called brothers of the Lord. Well, the siblings, quote-unquote, the alleged siblings of Jesus are James, Joseph, Simon, Jude, Salome, Mary. Now, in the secular view, again, they would be full siblings of Jesus, other children of Mary and Joseph. The other view that you see in the Protestant world, the second view, is that they are half-brothers, if you will, or half-sisters of Jesus. In other words, God himself is the father of Jesus in the sense that he is conceived of the power of the Holy Spirit in the womb of the Virgin, but that Mary and Joseph then went on to have other children of their own, James, Joseph, Simon, Jude, Salome, and Mary. So they're half-brothers in this scenario. Another situation, another way of looking at this, and this is common in the Orthodox churches of the East, but it's also common in the Catholic Church too, in the Eastern wing of the Catholic Church, Eastern Catholic rites. For example, Byzantine Catholics, Ukrainian Catholics, Coptic Catholics. Very often in these rites within the Catholic Church too, you have this concept that they are stepbrothers and stepsisters. The idea is that Joseph had a previous wife. He was a widower. She had passed away at some point in the past. And these children, these brothers and sisters of Jesus, are in fact children of Joseph from his previous wife. And that he married Mary as a widower simply to be her guardian, to be her protector, because she had consecrated herself already as a virgin. And Where does this come from? As we'll see, a lot of this comes from an early church document called the Proto-Evangelium of James. All right, it's not part of the Bible, but it might shed some light on what early Christians believed about who these alleged siblings are. And then, of course, there's the last view, which is that these brothers and sisters of Jesus are not, in fact, blood brothers or half-brothers or even stepbrothers. They're first cousins. So this is very common in the Western wing of the church. This has been the tradition in the Roman Rite, the Roman Catholic Church, that these children are actually children of Clopas, who could be one of the people on the road to Emmaus. A lot of people think that's Clopas, maybe even his wife, who are on the road to Emmaus. Jesus encounters them after the resurrection. So this idea that Clopas was married to somebody named, also named Mary, Mary of Clopas, and that they had children, James, Joseph, Simon, Jude, Salome, and Mary, and that Clopas may be Joseph's brother, the foster father of Jesus. Clopas might be his brother or maybe his brother-in-law. Clopas and his wife Mary have these children, so essentially they're cousins of Jesus. And in this view, the word brother means more than simply a blood brother or a half-brother. It has a reference to more distant family relations like cousin. And we do see this word used at times in the Greek Old Testament, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, where Abraham calls Lot his brother, when in fact he's not. He's his nephew. So that may be in view there as well. So those are different possibilities there. For Catholics, the only ones that would be acceptable, we know that it's true that Mary is ever virgin because it's a dogma of the church. We have a teaching church that cannot err in matters of faith and morals. The only views that would be acceptable within the Catholic view would be the stepbrother view, or the idea that Joseph had a previous marriage, or that they are some sort of distant relations, cousins. But I do think that either way, James is a relative of Jesus, but not a son of Mary. So hopefully that clears that up a little bit. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. It's our new series, Bonding with James. So now that we've straightened all that out, let me tell you a little bit about the life of James in the early church. So he became one of the most crucial leaders in the Jesus movement after the crucifixion of Jesus, after his death and burial, after Easter, his resurrection. Now, James, again, as we've talked about during our Easter series, he did not seem to have been someone who believed in Jesus during Jesus' earthly ministry. However, as Paul relates in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 6, this is, again, part of the Corinthian creed that Paul is quoting. It's an early church creed that talks about some of the resurrection appearances of Jesus. Paul specifically states that he appeared to James. Jesus resurrected, made a special resurrection appearance to James. 3 years after Paul himself converted, when he was on the road to Damascus and Jesus appeared to him, Paul went into he had gone into the desert of Arabia. It's kind of an extended retreat, and he goes to Jerusalem, and he wanted to make sure that the Jesus that he met was the same guy that they knew, the apostles knew in Galilee. There's continuity. Paul needs to get filled in on the earthly ministry of Jesus. So he meets with Peter, and he says he saw none of the apostles other than Peter except James, the Lord's brother. And that's in Galatians chapter 1, verse 9. Now, James may not have been one of the original 12 apostles, but he clearly was the host of the first council of the church, if you will, the first ecumenical council of the Catholic Church, the Council of Jerusalem, which likely took place in 49 AD. And this is a crucial, absolutely crucial meeting. And Peter, of course, the first pope, was there. James, as the Bishop of Jerusalem, was kind of hosting the whole gathering. And this is mentioned in Acts chapter 15, the Acts of the Apostles chapter 15. And really what's going on there is a major breach in the church is being healed. There were a number of Jewish Christians, a number of Jews who believed that Jesus was, in fact, the Messiah, risen from the dead. But of course, the message was now being preached to Gentiles as well. St. Peter had a lot to do with that. Acts chapter 10, Cornelius the centurion. And then, of course, Paul begins his mission to the Gentiles. So the question became, what do you do with all of these Gentiles who want to come into the church. They want to, they've come to accept Jesus as Messiah. Do they have to engage in the ceremonial works of the Old Covenant law before they can enter into the church and accept Jesus as Messiah? Do they have to become circumcised if they're uncircumcised males? Do they have to adhere to the dietary regulations of the Old Covenant? That's a really, really important question. If you have to have surgery before you can enter the church, that might affect a lot of people's decisions. So that's what they were talking about. And you can read about this again in Acts chapter 15. Well, Paul and his associates really took this stance that no, converts to the faith from the Gentile world don't have to observe the ceremonial works of the Torah. And James, when he speaks up at the council, he says, look, let's come up with a compromise here. And everybody accepts this. Gentiles in the Greek-speaking world, they don't need to be circumcised. They don't need to follow the dietary laws. But they do have to refrain from sexual impurity, from eating meat that was sacrificed to pagan idols, or meat that comes from an animal that was strangled, or from consuming blood. And you can read about this. This is a letter that was sent to all the churches. It comes from the Council of Jerusalem in Acts chapter 15. So, can't consume blood. You can forget about that extremely rare steak. So this is what's going on with James as the Bishop of Jerusalem, and we know how he met his demise as well. The Jewish historian Josephus, now this isn't recorded in the Bible, but Josephus, who wrote a lot about the life and times of the Jews and at the time of Christ, Josephus tells us that there was a certain Sadducee, and don't forget, who's in control of the high priesthood, who's in control of the temple establishment? It's the Sadducees. They're the ones who actually condemned Jesus to death, not the Pharisees or any of the other groups within the first century Jewish world. It was the religious authorities. They're all Sadducees. So Josephus says that there was a Sadducee, and his name was Anan, who was the son of another guy named Anan, Ananus the Younger. And this guy, Ananus the Younger, was the high priest in the year AD 62, and he was only the high priest for 3 months. Had a really, really brief tenure. But what happened basically during that time was that he convened the Sanhedrin, which is, of course, the major league council of the Jews, the Supreme Council, and he just kind of went crazy. He condemned a lot of people to death at that time, a lot of his enemies, and one of them was James, the so-called brother of the Lord. In fact, James was stoned to death. That's how he died. Now, Josephus was not very fond of this guy, Anan the Younger, or Ananus the Younger, as high priest. He called him insolent, and he said he was very rigid in judging offenders. And in fact, Anan was eventually removed from his high priesthood, from his office. The Pharisees kind of instigated this. They got the Jewish king, and his name was Agrippa II, who was in charge at the time, to take him out, to remove him from his office as high priest. Now, we know a little bit more about the death of James from the writings of Eusebius, who wrote a history of the church in the 4th century. We don't know how much of this is totally historically reliable, but we're told that James was so excessively righteous, he got the nickname James the Just, and he spent so much time praying on his knees that it is said that the skin of his knees became as hard as those of a camel's. How about that? Now, according to this particular testimony, James was martyred when he was thrown from the pinnacle of the temple, the southeast corner of the Temple Mount. We say, what about him being stoned to death? Well, after they threw him off, then they stoned him to death for good measure, and then they clubbed him as well. He was buried on the spot right where he was killed. Now, the question was, what happened to his bones? Were they placed in an ossuary, the same one that was discovered? We'll talk more about that next time on The Faith Explained, but I hope you're enjoying our brand new series about James. We're going to do some bonding with James. We're going to get into a little bit about his letter in the New Testament as well, the letter of James. He's quite the sage as well. You've been listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. If you've missed an episode, check the podcast on relevantradio.com and on the Relevant Radio app, wherever you get your podcasts, and I'll see you in the next episode. I'll also be back later today for the Cale Clark Show live at 5 p.m. Central, right here on Relevant Radio. See you then.